Fed's Janet Yellen delivering her final public remarks as chairwoman Wednesday.
Over the next month and a half, I will do my utmost to ensure a smooth transition to my designated successor, Jay Powell.
The Fed did raise interest rates at its last policy meeting of the year, marking a victory for the central bank, roughly 10 years after the 2008 financial crisis.
Bitcoin fever has seen blistering price gains for the digital currency. It's up over 1,600% this year. One of the biggest providers of digital currency wallets, Coinbase, went down under heavy traffic, leaving over 10 million customers unable to access their funds.
The kind of investors who are trading Bitcoin at the weekends and just doing it for a bit of fun are not going to be the ones who are going to be watching the price every second and are going to be able to get out their money very quickly.
Chicago's famous Ganella Baking Company faced a major problem this year. Their bread, buns, and bagels didn't quite have the usual texture that their customers expected. The reason? Heavy rains in Kansas, America's biggest wheat-producing state, resulted in a crop with low protein, something that dramatically changes any dough. U.S. consumption of wheat products fell to its lowest level in 22 years in 2011. And with dwindling demand, this winter, U.S. farmers are expected to plant the least wheat in over a century.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's December 14th, 2017. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. It's 5:11. Glad you're here with us. We've got a good show for you this morning. Chuck Garcia is here from Associated Bank. In our thought leader conversation, we're going to be talking about a little M&A activity going on. And a little bit later in the program, Airbnb, a news report on where they're growing in Chicago. We'll tell you what neighborhoods are succeeding. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures up about 30 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are weak to flat. And this morning around the globe, in Asia, markets are generally lower, with the Nikkei off about a quarter. The Shanghai is off about a third. In Europe this morning, lots of red. The FTSE is off about a quarter. The DAX is off about a half a percent. And the CAC is down about a third. And oil is trading at $56.59 a barrel, which is down just a penny. And on the crypto board this morning, Bitcoin at $16,632, which is down about a half a percent. Some stories we're watching for you. The Federal Reserve, as you heard Janet Yellen in the montage, boosted a key short-term interest rate yesterday at the last central bank meeting that Janet Yellen is expected to lead as the Fed chair. The Fed says it foresees about three additional hikes in 2018. Fed officials ended their two-day meeting yesterday by hiking the Fed fund rates. So that's what banks charge each other for short-term loans, to a range of 1.25% to 1.5%. And Yellen says that she and her colleagues expect a modest lift to economic growth from the tax cuts being proposed by President Trump and Republican lawmakers. Lawmakers from hard-hit states like Florida are demanding tens of billions of dollars of hurricane relief and rebuilding funds as part of another temporary Washington spending bill to keep the government from shutting down through Christmas. Hurricane money is one of many pressing items under consideration by GOP leaders as they struggle to devise a party strategy to avert a government shutdown. And congressional aides say negotiators have removed several controversial provisions from the tax cut bill, including one that would have eliminated the deduction for interest on student loans and another deduction for medical expenses. Two congressional aides also say the bill will no longer start taxing graduate school tuition waivers. The aides speaking on condition of anonymity. The House and Senate say they reached agreement in principle on their conference committee actions involving the tax cut bill, pushing it closer to floor votes in both houses. It is Thought Leader Thursday, and Chuck Garcia is here this morning. He's the Director of Commercial Deposits and Treasury Management at Associated Bank. Chuck, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thank you for
having
me.
And happy holidays as well.
And same to you.
There's some news happening at Evanston. Recently, there was a big battle over the deposits of a well-known bank that's calling it quits. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, I think I don't know the specifics about that individual bank, but I think in general what we are seeing, and I think we'll continue to see well into next year, is certain banks just aren't able to grow in the fashion that either their shareholders or their expectations are, there's still a fair amount of regulatory burden. Competition is fierce, and rates, even though they are rising, when they stay as low as they have, as long as they have, it still puts a lot of pressure on growth.
The bank is First Bank and Trust of Evanston. I think it's going to have about 20. It had about 25% of the market share.
Right.
Couldn't go any higher than that. Does that sound about right?
That's significant market share.
Yeah.
That, you know, for an organization to have that much, obviously they've been around a long time, mm-hmm. Very well known. But again, you kind of reach that peak and you can't open branches to where they make sense to grow in any type of measurable fashion. So it's not a real shock. I think we'll continue to see more of that.
So the banks that obviously that were in the running for this include some of the other bigger banks here in Chicago. I think Byline Bank also was in on this, trying to pick up some of their deposits. Was Associated in on any of this?
Not to my knowledge. We are in the midst of an acquisition integration right now, mm-hmm. in Wisconsin that really has us occupied. But I think any of the banks in our space are open to looking at acquisition, because it's a great opportunity to grow, especially when you have a good name. That's a very well-known, good, positive name in the market.
It's kind of sad, too, though, on a sense, because, you know, you have a community bank that I'm guessing a lot of people were pretty loyal to.
Yes.
And it goes away. When another bank comes in, a bigger bank comes in and swallows them up, how does that affect the customers there? Do you normally see customers bail, or do they make it worth their while to stay?
I think what you'll see with most customers that have been loyal to an organization like that is if they don't see a degradation in the service levels that they're accustomed to, often the same people are still there, hopefully. You know, mm-hmm. hopefully you can keep the same people, keep them in the branches where people are face-to-face. And as long as you can keep a level of service that people are accustomed to, you don't raise fees a lot, mm-hmm. And the impact to individual clients, be they corporate or consumer type of clients, often they'll choose to stay. Changing banks is not easy. Even for consumers, you have a lot of bill pay now. And so I think it's incumbent on the purchasing bank to make it right for their clients.
I think First Evanston was in on this, too. And I think they said that they were going to make sure that customers still didn't have to pay fees for ATMs. And so that opened up their network. Little things like that mean a lot.
Of course they do. Yes, you bet. And again, people are very conscious in the early days of, okay, is Bob still here? Okay, even if Bob is not here, is Sally now doing just as good a job as Bob did? And that's what people will be very, very attuned to.
I keep hearing there's going to be a lot of M&A activity kicking in here.
I believe so.
Are there other banks like this community bank that are sitting waiting out there?
There are a lot. You know, the other thing that comes into play often with community banks, you know, not just in the city but out in the rural parts of our states, are succession. You know, often the younger generation has no interest in being a part of the bank that their parents or grandparents were a part of. And so succession planning comes into play, and people go, you know what, it's a good time. Multiples in banks are very high right now, too. And so a good time to cash out for many that maybe can't make sense of it, and or maybe the family doesn't want to continue on, which is very, very common.
Are there investment opportunities if people are looking in from the outside when it comes to this activity?
I believe there is. I think anything north of $1 billion in particular in asset sizes often are publicly traded at that point in time. Absolutely there is.
So we'll stay tuned for that in 2018.
I think there will be a lot of change.
One of the other stories that caught my eye this past week, and we talked a little bit about this, is that Wells Fargo and Bank of America are moving now to stop people from depositing cash in other people's accounts. I didn't know that was a thing. I didn't know you could do that. And anyway,
well, because it's cash, historically you have been able to. And I think what you're seeing today, I think some people are trying to play it as more of, we don't want people in our branches. Frankly, I think it's more anti-money laundering. The penalties around that are so significant, especially for big banks. They're significant for all of us. But know your customer, know where the money is coming from is really critical. And I know ourselves, not specifically around cash, but we will frequently pass on certain relationships if we don't know where the origin of that deposit, be that cash or check, is coming from. So that's not a real shock to me.
The story I found in Biz Journals had the story of a woman who owed her mother money, and she deposited $60 in her mother's account, and she's upset that she's not going to be able to do that anymore. So there is that smaller part of the mom and pop philosophy that, hey, that's we're kind of moving away from that.
It is. You know, situations like that are, you know, they're unfortunate. And oftentimes you have to use a little common sense as well. But policies are what people have to follow. So it's unfortunate in those situations, but those are not what people are trying to get around or trying to solve for, I should say.
And the technology is such now that we don't need to put cash in accounts. There's the Venmo. There are other places that people send money to each other. Are banks getting, I mean, I know we've talked about this before. To what level are banks getting involved in the ability for me to send you money and me to send somebody else money?
It is much, much more active. I think you saw this really with the larger banks to begin with. It is becoming, and I think during the course of the next year, we'll see what comes. But I think in the next year, that will become much, much more mainstream. Whether people either utilize a Venmo type of application, create their own person-to-person type of payment, it will become very mainstream, I believe, in the next year.
A solution for the woman with $60, just give it to your mom. Just hand it over to your mom.
Right.
Right. Let's talk about some of the other trends. I know that we talked about the technology part of, you know, money, giving money, changing hands with the Venmos and stuff. But what else did you see as one of the trends of this past year that is taking hold that we'll see more of next year?
Well, I think information always is key. And how can you, and I since I operate more in the corporate space, information is really critical. Knowing where your money is, where it is located in the payment streams and so forth. So all of those things will continue to evolve. And the more information we can provide clients, the better. We've talked a lot about the cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. That continues to evolve and will continue to be a very significant piece of what we as an organization need to provide for ourselves as a bank, but also very, very important for our clients, be they consumer and or corporates. Those will continue to evolve.
One of the trends that I saw in a published report on this talked about something called payment hubs, that we'll see more of these payment hubs. What are payment hubs and why will we be seeing more of them?
Payment hubs are really where you get it more of a conglomeration of entities into a payment stream, and they utilize different means by which to pay one another. Mm-hmm. It's becoming, again, more mainstream. And I'd say the upper middle market, the larger corporate segments have utilized payment hubs for several years now, and as typically occurs, they begin to filter down into lower ends of the marketplace, be they middle markets. It's a very efficient means by which to pay people, receive payment, and then create some discounts amongst each other in the process. It too will become mainstream. I think I'd give a little longer window to that, out a couple of years, but I believe that will become very mainstream. Our bank is absolutely looking at that right now.
A lot of people are looking forward to having more ability to forecast cash flow.
Yes.
And those could do that.
Well, the predictability of the payments both going out and in creates a situation where you can maximize your cash. Absolutely. And again, creates discount opportunities that perhaps aren't out there today. So if I know you say pay me by Thursday and I pay you by Thursday, I know that money's out of my account in yours. And by then you can also create some discount opportunities for yourself.
There are all kinds of big players in this space. But more and more you hear about some of the lower to middle market players coming up.
Yes.
Who's active in the Chicago area?
Well, certainly the B of A's, the Chase's, mm-hmm. Wells Fargo, ourselves. I can't speak for like the private bank and others. Now, CIBC, I have to assume if they aren't doing it, I know they're looking at it. We attend a number of conferences together, and they are hearing the same messages that I'm hearing. And whether they're doing it today or not, the exploration is absolutely there. Again, coming more down market.
Is it going to be something that is demanded of banks to have this in place?
Eventually, sure. Yeah. And, you know, there's also opportunity if you can get out in front of it. If you know your client base and it's something that they're wanting and can utilize, you can certainly get ahead of the curve on that, because it takes a while to catch up and integrate these into your systems. I'm speaking for our bank anyway. Mm-hmm.
Another trend is the cloud. We keep hearing a lot about the cloud. One of the predictions for 2018 is we will see more proliferation of cloud-based activity.
We will. The simple cost efficiencies that are created of utilizing the cloud are enormous, and they're just getting better. They're getting better and better. So I know in a situation we had recently, we had a key decision to make on how much data we would move. Let's say we said move it all. It's inexpensive. Yeah. And so old days, we would have parsed a number of elements out and probably created a lot of friction for our clients, we decided to go the route of let's take it all because it is so efficient and inexpensive.
And is it to the point now, you mentioned security earlier, where the risk management part of this has been handled to the point where you feel more and more comfortable?
I think we all do, yes. Again, the minute we get far too comfortable is a bad day for all of us. But yeah, the comfort level is much, much higher today.
Yeah, and speaking of risk, it almost seems like we've forgotten all about the data breach at the credit monitoring agencies.
Yes.
It's sort of off the radar screen completely. Has there been any backlash to any of that?
I think the immediacy of the backlash was felt.
Mm-hmm.
I am sure they are still feeling pain. It's just not in the news as much, but I have to think inside their own walls. They're still feeling the pain of the loss of accounts, loss of confidence, which is huge in that business.
Yeah, I have not seen any stories of people who've lost money.
Nor have I.
Yeah, so that's good. But then again, maybe the criminals are just sort of waiting. And
that absolutely is an occurrence where they'll take your information today and wait 6 months to do something with it.
What else does your crystal ball tell you about 2018?
Well, obviously, I think we will see more rate increase during the course of the year. All the economic indicators seem to point that way, whether it's two or three in 2018. I think that's still out, but at least two, I believe, we'll see. I think we'll see one this week. Maybe it's hopeful, but I think we will. I think so. Rates will continue to rise. I think that will put pressure on organizations like ours of how do we respond? Do we increase our rates at a rate commensurate with the rate increases? How quickly do we do that? So it certainly puts strategic implications into ourselves and our competitors. I think consumers as a whole, I think the efficiency of the payment systems will continue to get better and better. And so as consumers, corporates, I think we'll make things more efficient. And I think the demand on organizations like ours as banks is going to continue to be strong because consumers do want that in particular.
We're heading into a year where, you know, we're coming out of a year where consumer confidence, business confidence, everybody's confidence is really high. Is it time now to start seeing that translate into projects and other kinds of things that you would normally see come through the bank?
I think we will. You know, the whole tax implications that are right in flight right now will have a significant impact on people's willingness to invest. We are absolutely seeing corporates in particular using more of the cash they've built up over the last 5, 6, 7 years. Rather than borrowing, using that cash, putting it in play in factory and in upgrades that they probably put off. And I think the tax implications that we'll see repatriation of funds potentially into the U.S. could be very substantial for the economy. And even it could get very heated during the course of the year in terms of the economy. And I think that'll be interesting to watch and see how the Fed responds with that.
Any New Year's resolutions for yourself coming up?
Well, the usual: lose weight, yeah. Don't eat so much, all of those things. I'm sure they will come on a sheet of paper. But, you know, I think I'm very optimistic for our business, for our clients' business, and looking forward to another good year.
Chuck, it's always good talking with you. Have a great holiday season.
And the same to you.
Chuck Garcia is the Director of Commercial Deposits and Treasury Management at Associated Bank. Make sure you tune in every Thursday for another Thought Leader Conversation. You can find our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the Thought Leader page on the opening bell page.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Peapod, the Chicago-based online grocery delivery pioneer, announced that customers can now use text messaging to order their next delivery. Customers can now type, speak, or even use emojis to build their grocery list and update their Peapod carts. Layer 3 TV, a Denver-based cable TV startup with Chicago ties, has been acquired by T-Mobile. The deal will allow T-Mobile to launch an internet-delivered television service. Layer 3 was co-founded by a former Chicagoan and executive at Motorola, and Chicago was the startup's first full city rollout. And Grubhub's CMO Barbara Martin Coppola is leaving the company in February, according to Cranes. Coppola came to Grubhub 2 years ago from Google, and before that worked at Texas Instruments and Samsung. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. Airbnb has done a little research to see where the growth is in Chicago, and neighborhood growth, that is. And there's some interesting findings. Ben Bright is with Public Relations at Airbnb is with us this morning here on The Opening Bell. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning to you, Steve. Glad to be on.
This is kind of interesting. The neighborhoods where you see Airbnb growth, some surprising results here. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I think it's going to raise a few eyebrows. So, you know, we obviously Chicago's status as a tourism hub has been elevating, you know, for decades now. But a lot of neighborhoods haven't really been able to take part in that and benefit from the new revenue. You know, Airbnb obviously is allowing hosts in any neighborhood in the city to take part and to welcome hosts. And when we look at our fastest growing neighborhoods, so those who are that are achieving 100% year-over-year growth in Airbnb guests going and staying, they're all on the south side and west side. And it's East Garfield Park, North Lawndale, Armour Square, which is the number one fastest growing neighborhood for Airbnb in Chicago. Bridgeport, and probably the most surprising one to your listeners maybe is Englewood. People are coming to Englewood. They're staying in Englewood, and they're experiencing, you know, the real Englewood residents beyond, you know, some of the headlines that folks may see. So, you know, we see this as an exciting trend and hopefully one that's infusing, you know, some new economic activities for some neighborhoods that really need it.
And even more surprising is when you look at the numbers themselves. Armour Square, 180% year-over-year growth. North Lawndale, 157% year-over-year growth. Englewood, 106% year-over-year growth. Those are some big numbers.
Yeah, and we attribute it to one of two things. One is, you know, a lot of Airbnb users, particularly millennials, they're actively looking for a different type of experience. They want that authenticity. They want to see the Loop. They love the Loop, but maybe they don't want to stay there, right? They don't want to be confined to just the downtown hotel district. They want to see, you know, quote unquote, real Chicago, right? The real neighborhood. So that's one reason. And another are just, you know, big events, particularly for these South Side neighborhoods, Lollapalooza, where hotels sell out, you know, our activity explodes. And, you know, people are just looking for a listing anywhere that can get them within walking distance to the festival or whatever the event is. And, you know, they'll snap it up, maybe not thinking about the neighborhood that they're in, but they come out. This is what our hosts in these neighborhoods tell us, that they come out with a deeper appreciation for a neighborhood that maybe they hadn't thought of before, that maybe they wouldn't have wanted to experience before, but they're glad they did. So we think that's important.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. How much of this is somebody making a reservation, not fully knowing what the neighborhood is about, and then afterwards their response or their reaction to where they've stayed?
Yeah, that happens all the time. You know, so we've, you know, when we talk to some of our hosts, they say, you know, we ended up with someone who, you know, wasn't really familiar with the neighborhood. You know, once they did a research, you know, they saw some headlines they didn't like, but they realized that once you actually get there and you meet the people, that all is well. These are wonderful people in these neighborhoods, and it also ends up benefiting the small businesses that are out there. You know, for Airbnb guests in Chicago, about 50% of what they spend at restaurants and other small businesses is in the neighborhood that they're staying in. So if they're staying in Armour Square or North Lawndale or East Garfield Park, you know, 50% of what they're spending in the process just to live while they're on their vacation or whatever they're in town for is going and staying with the small businesses in that neighborhood. So it's not just the hosts that make money, which, you know, obviously is very valuable for them to make ends meet and pay some bills. But it's helpful for a lot of the small shops in those areas that are trying to survive as well.
Is there a lesson here, Ben, for the rest of us, too, that live here that maybe we sometimes don't give some of these communities the props that they're deserving? I mean, some of these neighborhoods have wonderful things in them and wonderful people in them. And maybe we who live here should learn a lesson from these numbers.
I think so. You know, what the hosts in these neighborhoods tell us is that the neighborhoods the stereotypes that get applied to them. It's not just by outsiders. It's by, Chicagoans as well that maybe don't delve into the South Side and the West Side as much as they should. So I think there is a lesson there, Steve, that, we all as fellow Chicagoans should take time to experience all 77 neighborhoods and, not just confine ourselves to, the one that we live in or where all the business is, like in the Loop. So I think that's a lesson that I'm taking, and I would encourage your listeners to do that as well.
Do the numbers also give people who may be in some of these neighborhoods that are not hosts now the idea that perhaps they should become hosts?
Absolutely. When we go out and talk to our hosts in these neighborhoods we'll meet their neighbors as well, that there's not much awareness of the platform in general. And a lot of them will just assume, no one wants to come to Armour Square. No one wants to come to Inglewood. And the numbers speak for themselves. People are coming. And, whether they're actively seeking it out or just coming for an event and just happen to land in it, either way, they are coming. They're paying money. They want to experience a different side of Chicago. So we would certainly encourage anyone who lives on the South Side or the West Side. Generally, South Side and the West Side are the fastest growing areas for Airbnb in Chicago, and have been for a few years now. Hopefully this can change a few minds and prospective hosts, Chicagoans can understand that if they open up their homes, people will come.
What did the studies show about some of the other neighborhoods? Any surprises, anything out of the ordinary?
I think no surprises as far as, the Loop and the River North and North Side. Those are always going to be very popular neighborhoods. One thing that we're seeing more in those neighborhoods is actually business travel. So not the type of traveler you may think of as using an Airbnb type platform, but a lot are realizing that, if I'm coming for business in, say Wicker Park, where I think there's only one hotel now, I actually want to stay in Wicker Park, and that's a popular neighborhood in its own right. But, a lot of business travelers now just want to be within walking distance of wherever they want to be, even if it's not necessarily in the Loop. So that's been an interesting trend in more of the traditionally touristy neighborhoods, I would say.
As the holiday season is in full swing here, I had an odd question for you, Ben, and it's because I've never been in an Airbnb place over the holidays. If you're a host, should you be decorating your place for the holidays? And how do you deal with the holidays at Airbnb?
I think holidays are very popular for our platform because there's a lot of family travel, a lot of big groups, families traveling together, and they want to be under one roof, and they want to be within walking distance of the families that they're traveling to see. So, if that's in any neighborhood other than the Loop, this is an attractive platform for folks like that. As far as hosts, everyone has to establish their own hosting identity. That's what we tell our hosts in Chicago. If folks feel like that's something they want to do, decorate for the holidays and, then they should, but it's not necessary. I would say everyone goes about it in a different way, but we find that generally speaking, our hosts in Chicago really go the extra mile to be hospitable and to make their guests feel like locals while they're here in Chicago.
I'm betting that includes some cookies and milk and maybe some stockings on the mantle
so.
As well. Ben, good talking with you as always. Happy holidays to you.
Okay, take care, Steve.
Ben Bright with Airbnb with the latest on a study on Chicago neighborhood growth.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures up 43 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures starting to climb as well. NASDAQ futures up about 10. Gold and silver are trading higher this morning as well. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, in livestock trade at the Mercantile Exchange yesterday, live cattle futures closed lower. Softer wholesale beef demand and this week's expectations for steady to lower cash prices taking back some of Tuesday's rally. The December contract, incidentally, will end today, but February, the most actively traded cattle contract, down 77 cents at 118.37 in today's trade. Turning to the grain market, for the second day, wheat traded higher. Short covering and concerns now about U.S. weather. Concerns are that cold weather could hurt the U.S. winter wheat crop, and that helped the market. Corn and soybeans ticked higher, although gains were capped again by ample world supplies. I spent a very interesting day in Washington, D.C. yesterday, about an hour and a half in the office of Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue, who is optimistic about getting some things done before the next year comes to a close, like writing a farm bill. He said, "We have to get that done by the end of 2018, and I think we will." And the other topic of conversation, of course, NAFTA. And he, at the moment, continues to be optimistic, said that he thinks we will get a NAFTA agreement in the next year, and it will not hurt U.S. farmers. The entire interview will air on Saturday morning, December 30th. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
All right, Orion, thank you. You too. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Thursday, December 14th. The Labor Department reports today on the number of people who applied for unemployment benefits last week. Also today, the Commerce Department releases U.S. retail sales data for November. Meanwhile, Freddie Mac reports on this week's average mortgage rates. Federal Communications Commission meeting today will include a vote on net neutrality, likely unraveling sweeping net neutrality rules that guaranteed equal access to the Internet. Advocates of the regulations bracing for a long fight. Today's vote scheduled at the FCC could usher in big changes in how you use the Internet. Net neutrality supporters are planning legal challenges. Many of them hope to ride that wave of public opinion into the 2018 elections. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Thursday, December 14th. A couple of other stories for you this morning from the business world. Walmart is providing workers with an app aimed at helping them budget their money and get paid before payday. The retailer says it teamed up with financial technology startup Even to provide the services to Walmart's 1.4 million workers. The Even app automatically plans ahead for bills or savings goals, and it allows Walmart workers to access cash before a scheduled payday. Critics of the service say this is a sign, another sign, that Walmart doesn't pay its workers enough. And Microsoft has rolled out new features on its Bing search engine powered by artificial intelligence. One update announced yesterday answers search queries by summarizing two opposing sides of contentious questions. Another measures how reputable sources, how many reputable sources are behind any given answer.